Hi, everybody. This is Laurie Handlers, and welcome again to Tantra Cafe. You're listening to bbsradio.com, and this program is a program about spiritual enlightenment. Anyway, I wish you all Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I greet you in peace. I really greet you in peace. I will always greet you in peace. Even if it seems like sometimes I don't greet you in peace, I'm still greeting you in peace. Sometimes it's a piece of my mind, I guess. Anyway, this evening I have a special show planned. I'm going to be talking to you about India once again. I have talked to you about India once before, and probably a few times before, but really a show about it and why, as a tantric teacher, I would take people to India. What's the point of doing that? Why would somebody who's interested in Tantra go to India? You know, like, what's it all about? Where did Tantra begin? Actually, I'll just say that it's my belief that Tantra started in ancient Egypt, and I probably said this before on the show as well, but then it got carried into southern India, and that's where it really flourished and developed and grew. And so that's why so many of the tantric practices and some of the terms we use, et cetera, are synonymous with some Hindu things, Hindu gods and goddesses, and Hindu practices, even though Tantra predates Hinduism, and it predates every modern religion that exists today. Tantra is thousands of years old, much older than those things, much older than Hinduism. So, but it does, it has some aspects of it because it spent so long. The whole practice and science of Tantra spent so long in southern India. And then, as I've mentioned to you before, it went into the underground and became a verbal transmission rather than a written transmission because India was threatened so many times, like invaded 400 times to be exact. And certain practices, certainly esoteric ones, were threatened by some of those invaders on occasion. So that's just a little bit about demystifying Tantra for you this evening. And the setup as the appetizer for Tantra Cafe as to why this evening we're going to talk about India. Now, my guest tonight is a special friend of mine and also a person who loves India, a person who knows so much about Tantra. She has written what I call the Encyclopedia of Tantra. So my guest tonight is Dr. Judy Koryansky. She is real. She's like my sister person. We've found each other after studying Tantra and just formed a mutual admiration society. Judy has written the book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex, which many of you have and hold near and dear to yourselves. I had the privilege of having one of the edits on Judy's first edition, although I think it's now in its third edition, and I was very proud at the time. I just felt like she encompassed so much in that book, and she continues to add to that book each time they come out with a new edition. She also is, besides being a tantric expert, teacher, psychology professor at Columbia University, she's a clinical psychologist. She had a radio show. She's a media personality. Besides all that, she's also a world peace advocate who does healings all over the world. She uses some of the techniques that we talk about. And you can go to my site, Tantra Cafe, to hear one of the shows Judy and I did about using tantric techniques in the Middle East with tsunami victims, with victims of the hurricane disaster that happened in New Orleans. Judy's amazing. So it gives me great pleasure this evening to introduce her to you personally. Judy, are you there?
I sure am. I was listening enraptured, which is a good Tantra word, to your description about your commitment to India and to Tantra, you being quite a tantrika, an author, a teacher, a lecturer, a workshop leader extraordinaire, which I encourage everybody to take. And I have a picture transfixed in my mind of you doing Egyptian tantric transmission techniques. So it's
quite fascinating
that you described tantra beginning in Egypt, because most people think of it as India, and you are going to India, which I want to hear all about. But indeed, your Egyptian tantra is unique.
Thank you, yeah. Yeah, it's I do have some Egyptian techniques. You know, there is there's a book or two. I have one of the books called Egyptian Tantra. And it has loads of Egyptian hieroglyphs and lots of techniques that are some that are familiar and were familiar to me as, you know, the more Indian techniques, but other things that are quite different. Really quite different, and I love the Egyptian techniques that I do in my classes. I love, we have a hieroglyph pose, and we have a mummy pose, and then we have some Egyptian chanting that we do. Different, you know, an Egyptian balancing breath. Yeah, there's quite a bit. There's quite a bit,
which,
so thanks
it's
for that.
Fascinating, yes, and indeed, the picture, which actually is a photograph that I took at the end of one of your workshops when you were demonstrating it, and people are familiar with the profile of the feet that many Egyptian paintings have, and in fact that 1 foot forward, 1 foot slightly back is part of what the pose is, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and those, it's exactly like the hieroglyphs that are inscribed on the walls of Egyptian tombs and things. Because, you know, Egyptian art was somewhat two-dimensional. They didn't have a way to depict depth, so they just had, you know, 1 foot in front of the other, kind of demarking some kind of movement.
Right.
Yeah.
Profile, as opposed to some way of showing it coming at you in
exactly.
As you said. Right. Well, that's, at some point, then I'm sure you'll be taking people to Egypt, because your trips to India are really a tremendous gift to the world, of really putting all your knowledge together and taking people to the highlights that they would never really know about or know the history of, including, let's hear what the itinerary is, because one's coming up just in a few weeks.
Yes,
is there room?
I have one. Pardon?
Is there room? Can people?
If somebody was to call me today, tomorrow, the next day, like within the next 3 days, today's November 5th. If somebody were to call me by November 8th, no later than, and they already had a passport, and they could just, you know, pay for the full price of the trip, et cetera, I'd have room for one more person.
Whoa, that would be a very lucky person. One more person, because I already know you have some very interesting people who are going with you.
I have a few of my students are going, who have been with me for at least the last year, maybe longer. Actually, one of them, Stephen, who's from London, he's been with me for ever since. You remember that time you were in London at my workshop in the year 2000?
Oh, yes.
Well, he was in that workshop.
Oh,
so he's been, yeah, so he's been with me for 8 years. So I have a few students who have been with me for a really long time. I have a few novices, like complete beginners to Tantra, who may have come to a talk I did in at the New Life Expo in New York, and then I have I have someone who was my show guest a few weeks ago. Deborah Annapol is coming with me, and she's a well known author and Tantra teacher. And then I have a few Dakas and Dakinis, people who actually practice Tantra and provide Tantra sessions with individuals.
Well,
and
that is quite a lineup there. There would be a lot of people who'd want to be in the midst of that group, and especially hearing your really explanation about what it is. So what's the itinerary?
Well, we start in Delhi, but I don't care for Delhi very much. So we leave Delhi as quickly as possible.
Well, Delhi's a big city, right?
Yeah, Delhi's a big city, and my reasoning for this, I feel that when we come back to Delhi after being on tour for a little while, then it's okay to be in Delhi. But when people first get to India, Delhi can be a little bit overwhelming. So I like to get people out of Delhi as quickly as possible. So when they arrive on November 19th, and they rest, they sleep for that whole day. Maybe we eat dinner together later in the night. That's all. The very next day, we board a large bus, you know, like an air-conditioned coach, and we drive together to the town of Pushkar. Pushkar is a small village town which is in the middle of Rajasthan, the most colorful state in India. And in Pushkar, the reason we go there because Pushkar is very easy to navigate and very welcoming for tourists to start to get their bearings in a culture that is so foreign to Western culture. So Pushkar has narrow streets and cute little markets. Have you been there?
No, I've never been to Pushkar. I've heard you talk
Pushkar.
About it. But
yeah, I
love easing into the whole experience because
that's
why. Been to India, it could be a little shocking.
That's exactly why we start with Pushkar. So here's what's possible in Pushkar. People can, first of all, it's a holy city. It's very holy, like...
I just want to point out to people that I love how you say, here's what's possible. Because you do always look at the possibilities. So, okay, here's what's possible came really very, very naturally out of your mouth.
It does. It is natural out of my mouth.
Right.
So in Pushkar, we go to, we climb up to Savitri Mountain, and at the top of the Savitri Mountain is a temple. And it's you know, if we get there in the morning, really early in the morning, kind of at dawn, first of all, it's kind of a schlep up that mountain, but it's a fabulous view of this beautiful holy city of Pushkar, and there are monkeys up there that that will follow us around a little bit. They're kind of they kind of look at us in puzzlement because we do tantric exercises on top of this mountain. We do Shakti Shiva Mudra and maybe Rishis.
Yeah, see, that's part of what people need to know is it makes your trip different than, you know, anybody's
right.
trip to India, that at that wherever you are, not only are you taking them to the sacred sites, but that when you're there, you're actually doing the practices. So that's
right.
like a double
right.
Shot of enlightenment and ecstasy.
Right, so we're going to do the practices, and then we come down. There are
with
beautiful
the monkeys. Now,
the monkeys watch us.
That is just amazing. They probably get the spirit, right? How funny is that?
Well, you know, a couple years ago we shot a film of this, and it's hysterical. We have takes where monkeys are scratching their heads and looking at us like, who are these people acting like monkeys? You know what
right.
I mean?
Well, you know, it's very interesting about monkeys because the monkeys are in the sacred site temples in Nepal, in Kathmandu as well. So, I mean, monkeys are indigenous to that place, but they seem to collect around sacred places, too.
I think it's because people, well, here's my thought about that, because people make offerings.
Oh.
And sometimes the offerings are milk, and sometimes the offerings are honey.
Right.
And sometimes the offerings are bananas.
Oh, yes, that's it. Yeah. They make offerings not to the monkeys, they're making offerings to the gods and goddesses.
Right. But
right.
the monkeys come right
yes.
in and say, oh, here's some banana,
okay.
you know.
Right. right.
But then there are also monkey temples. I mean, we're going to go, I'll get to
yes.
that too. We're going to go to a monkey
right.
temple also.
Right.
So anyway, then in Pushkar, people can walk through the streets. It's a very navigable marketplace where people can start to learn to negotiate. They can see really colorful things, kind of like the things that India has to offer. And it's because it's not a big city, they can walk easily in twos, you know, in pairs, and start to get their bearings with the whole idea that Hindu is not really so much of a recognizable language to them, and the customs are very different, and there's cows in the streets, and, you know, they just start to get the idea, like, oh, I'm in India.
Right.
And then we go to, there's a Brahma temple in Pushkar also, which is one of the, there's very few Brahma temples in the world because of a mythology where Brahma was waiting for a ceremony with his wife Savitri, and he didn't wait for her. He actually married Gayatri, which is another goddess, mm-hmm. while he was waiting. He couldn't wait any longer, so he married Gayatri, and Savitri punished him and said, you will because you defiled me in marriage, you will only have one temple in all the world. And so here's this temple to Brahma, which is in Pushkar, and this, I don't know if there's any others anywhere else in the world.
Oh,
if there
my
are,
goodness.
Very
what a story.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful temple. It's all painted blue, and it's got a statue of it, of Brahma and Gayatri inside. And, of course, Savitri, the mountain we've just climbed, she's watching them from her mountaintop. You know, she's like a, she's a
vengeful.
Well,
who is Brahma?
Well, in Hindu tradition, there's the trinity of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva.
Right.
And Brahma
well, supposedly
is,
the same person, aren't they, in some way?
Well, they're aspects. One is creation, one is maintenance, and the other is destruction.
Right, that's right. Which one is destruction?
Shiva.
Oh, okay.
Shiva's destruction. Brahma is the idea, you know, like the creation of the idea. Vishnu is the maintainer.
Ah.
And Shiva is the destroyer, like he destroys it to start all over again.
Okay.
You know, to come up with a new iteration, even better than before, whatever. He destroys the ego and pride and all the same kinds of things. He's like the male counterpart of Kali.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we usually think of Shiva and Shakti together, as people would probably think, but Kali is quite a fascinating goddess, and there is a wonderful temple to Kali outside of Kathmandu, where people go every Tuesday and Thursday, I think it is, to make sacrifices, where I've been and watched them bring their calves and other animals, and they slice their necks and pour the blood over the statue of Kali, and then some very specially identified people clean the animal, and then they feast.
Wow. I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, that's way up on the hill. It takes a very long time to get there. You have to go way up on the hill and outside.
Well, I'm planning to do that next year. I'm actually planning to do a different tour next year, so...
Okay, so you're in Pushkar, you're at the Brahmin
temple.
So we're
in Pushkar, and then we go down to the there's a holy lake in Pushkar, and it's said that even people like Gandhi, even though people make pilgrimages to the Ganges to spread their ashes and make their final testament, it's said that they hold over a few ashes for themselves, and they put those ashes in the lake at Pushkar. So this is like a holy lake, and it has ghats at it, which ghats are the steps down into the water so people can pray and put their bodies into the water. You know, they're alive bodies into the water. They can, like, swim in there. So we go down there, and we make our little offering, and then if people want to, here's the other possibilities. If they want to, they can ride some camels in Pushkar. So they can take a camel ride into the desert.
Oh, my. That'll be fun.
Yeah, just for a little while, a short camel ride. And Pushkar is also, you know, it's a vegetarian city, just the same way as Varanasi is. It's, you know, especially along the Ganges. It's, Pushkar is considered a holy city. So that's that's Pushkar. That's where we start to get acclimated to India. And then we get back on the bus and we go to Jaipur, the pink city. And in Jaipur, we do a lot of sightseeing. We go to the Palace of Winds. We go to, Jantar Mantar, which is it's a place that's an astronomy, astrology, calculation, it reminds me of, the planetarium in New York. You know, it's a place where one of the emperors, Man Singh, built this so he could measure the stars and he could tell exact time. So it's quite an amazing structure or set of structures. So we go to that. We go to the City Palace, which is this beautiful, beautiful palace and has these very ornate guards who have beautiful turbans on and everything. We do that. And then we also, in Jaipur, we do elephant rides. We go on elephant back up to the fort, the Amber Fort. And And that's great. I mean, just riding on an elephant is fun. And the elephants there are all painted and beautiful. And then we go to this amazing fort. And the best part of this fort is that there's a Kali temple in this fort.
Who better than you to describe exactly who that goddess is about and why that's important in people's lives and should be embraced so much, as you call it, the aspect of Kali, which is?
Yeah. The aspect of Kali is the burning of ego and pride, like the destroying of that which really doesn't serve us in our lives. As we evolve and grow, we see that our ego starts to get in the way, and the things that we're attached to, and many of us are very attached to our egos and our the way our personality is, and Kali represents the killing of that off, killing off the ego, and she represents that physically, like she's depicted in the pictures of her and the statues of her as having a human skull around her neck.
Right.
And having a belt around her waist of arms with hands on them, and she usually has a skull of someone, you know, someone's ego that she's just destroyed, and she's standing on top of Shiva. She's quite scary to some people, but basically to embrace her is to actually embrace the part of us, inside of us, that has destroyer as well, and that needs some destruction. So this great temple to her is in this fort in Jaipur. And
I love the way you describe the times when you are expressing that part of you that is forceful, I would have to say, that you would say, okay, my Kali is coming out.
I'm in my Kali now.
Right. Yeah. It's a way to really communicate with people and to accept that part of oneself when you are truly being forceful and assertive,
yeah.
I would have to say.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. So we go to that Kali temple. I like to get there. I hope that sometimes people are a little bit late, but I like to get us over there in time for the temple to open. Because if we get there when the temple opens, the priests in that temple, first of all, they're all wearing red. In most temples in India, they wear like orange type of garb. But these priests wear red, and when we get in there early, they put red powder on our foreheads in the bindi spot, and they really honor us. And then they just start clanging their bells and beating drums. And I've been in there with my students before when my students, who have all done some form of emotional release with me, really get into the beat of the drums and the bells and the noise of it, and they start getting, they have spontaneous kundalini experiences in the temple.
That's intense. Spontaneous. I thought you were going to say a little bit emotional release, but spontaneous.
Well, that too.
Right.
That too. I mean, the kundalini starts to rise, their energy starts rising, and they start having tears, and their hearts start beating. I mean, it's happened to two or three of my students before in this temple. So,
well,
I love
tears,
that temple.
Though, right? You can have happy experiences, right?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like scary ones. Like, it isn't like, I can't think of that guy's name who wrote that scary. You know, if people have had some tantra, they don't tend to get scared when their kundalini starts rising. They're excited. And they got very special treatment last time it happened. The priests put all these rose necklaces on them.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, I mean, the priests recognized, you
that
know, that
they
we weren't
at another level of consciousness.
Yeah, we weren't your regular tourists.
Right, I see, right. No, there's no way this is, as you're describing it, no way this is a regular tour. You are talking about going in Jaipur here and there, but you're in the meanwhile describing some of the tantric techniques and
exactly.
Really, you know, having people go through the experience on another understanding level.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, while we're on the bus, we do Osho techniques. We do Osho gibberish. We do emotional release techniques while we're riding on the bus.
Okay, so this is no simple ride on the bus. Right. Osho.
We do sharing. Everybody sets intentions. I mean, you know, we do.
Oh, that's intense.
Yeah,
right.
We do.
Gibberish.
It's like a workshop.
I love gibberish. So, yeah, a workshop on the bus. So the gibberish goes how? I mean, people might enjoy doing it at the moment.
Well, we do. Let's see. What would we do? I can describe it as we do it in the class. I'm not sure we do it exactly the same way on a bus because we can't. But if somebody wanted to do gibberish, they could do. They could put on really great drum music, and they could dance with their eyes closed for about 10 minutes. So they could put on, let's say, a 10-minute piece of music, and then at the end of 10 minutes, the minute the music goes off, they would start speaking in no recognizable words.
Which
so they would
sound
say,
like
if I was speaking to gibberish to you, I would be going like the whole rule of it is to speak as if I was having a conversation without any words that were recognizable.
Right. And what is the purpose actually of the dancing before?
Well, I'm going to tell you that in a second, because there's one more part, and then I'll tell you the purposes. So then, after speaking in gibberish for about 5 to 10 minutes, then after that, one would be quiet, completely quiet for 5 to 10 minutes.
Right.
So the exercise has three parts.
Well,
it's movement.
Yes.
Speaking in no recognizable words, and then silence. And so the purpose is, the purpose of the movement is to get the energy moving in the body, especially the sexual energy.
Right.
The second part, the gibberish, is to release things, emotions and thoughts that are, that are destructive or that are blocking. And the idea of not having anything recognizable is to be able to say, well, I've released things. I don't even know what I released. But I know I released things. I feel great. It's like a big energy release.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third part, being silent, is to just be quiet. Like Osho's idea was that that Westerners could not really quiet their mind. They couldn't just sit quietly. That the idea of meditation for a Westerner was almost impossible to get Westerners to sit quietly. So the only way they could do it is to go to the opposite extreme, to make a lot of noise, and then be able to come back to the silence. With permission for noise, then you can have permission for silence.
Well, that's totally brilliant. I mean, Osho, the autobiography, which actually wasn't an autobiography because somebody else wrote it since he was dead already, is the autobiography of a spiritually incorrect mystic. That's the title. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah. Listen, in a moment we're going to need to take a little break and then come back. So let's hold the thought on, we just finished the idea of doing gibberish on the bus, and we were in Jaipur, and when we come back, we'll talk about visiting the Taj Mahal and the purpose of that. If people have just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handler, your host, and my guest tonight is Dr. Judy Koryansky, the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex, as well as numerous other books, Generation Sex?
Sex.
That book?
Just that word.
And some other books. Judy's written quite a few books, so we'll be back with her. She's asking me tonight a lot of things about India. If you want to call in, please call us on 888-228-4494. That's anywhere in the U.S. or Canada you can reach us. Or you can send me a fast chat message on bbsradio.com. Please stay tuned. We will be
What's the number again?
Oh, 888-228-4494.
4494, that's easy.
Okay.
228-4494.
Yes, please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Are you someone who's looking for more pleasure in your life and you've never heard of Eve's Garden? Eve's Garden is a comfortable and elegant environment for women to explore the tools of pleasure and other educational materials. These materials enhance mind, body, and spirit. Eve's Garden encourages women to take responsibility for their own sexuality and clearly understand that bodily pleasure and spiritual joy are one and the same. While in New York City, you can visit the store at 119 West 57th Street, Suite 1201. And now, for a limited time, you can get a 15% discount on everything in stock if you go through evesgarden.com/Tantra Cafe. Go there now.
Are you feeling like you just don't get it? All this talk about sex and love, love and sex. Feeling like all people ever think about and talk about is sex. Maybe you are longing for a more spiritual sexual connection. Hey, maybe you are just totally confused about all of it. Lori Handler's new book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy, puts the innocence and love back into sex. And it gives Tantra the respect it truly deserves. In this book, you will discover a wonderful meditation on self-love. You will also find fun new ways to develop an intimacy with yourself, whether or not you have a partner. And now, for only $19.99, you can get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. Right now, go to www.sexandhappiness.com and order your copy. Give yourself the gift.
That's sexandhappiness.com.
Hi again, everybody. Thanks for staying tuned. We are back with Tantra Cafe. I'm here with Dr. Judy Koryansky, my dear friend, fabulous author, Tantrika herself, traveled to India, Kathmandu, Nepal, Tibet, all these places, also travels to China. So Judy and I are talking about India. Judy's asking me a lot of questions about my upcoming India tour, which I've taken people on over the last 3 years, and I have room for one more person on this tour. If somebody's listening this evening and wants to call me, get in touch with me. You can write to me at laurie@butterflyworkshops.com, or you can call in the station. You can call in right now, 888-228-4494, anywhere from the U.S. or Canada. If you want to go and you can't go this year, I'm going to do this tour one more time next November. So anybody who's just hearing for the first time and getting interested in it, I do have a few people already signed up for 2009, and if you want to be one of them, you can get in touch with me at your earliest convenience. So, Judy, let's see. We were talking about Osho, the brilliant, what was the name of that book?
The Autobiography of Spiritually Incorrect Mystic, which was such a perfect word for him. And he just twisted things around all the time in reasoning, so that whatever you said, he would just reflect it back to you, and didn't believe in, he thought that believing in a religion was a religion, and so anybody who was irreligious, and he just always turned everything on its head, and through confusion made you see clearly.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and even as you were describing earlier, the technique of the gibberish being dancing and then doing gibberish for 5 minutes and then being silent, I remember being in Pune, which you're also maybe taking people to, but you've been to many times in India, where Osho had his retreat, which is more like a resort now. Mystic Rose was a technique that was a workshop that he did. It was a week of crying, a week of laughing, and a week of silence.
Yeah.
For hours, you lie on a mat, and people think, are you crazy? How can you do that? And I remember doing that, and I thought, oh, how am I going to get through this? It's just going to be impossible. But it's very odd. When you start to cry, you just start really crying, and then you don't cry, and then you do cry, and, you know, whatever, and things that. And in the end, in a sense, you realize, well, it doesn't really matter. It's all the same. That's
exactly.
One conclusion you can come to. I mean, anybody can come to any conclusion, which is part of, you know, the conundrum of it all. But we so on your trip, we were in Jaipur.
Wait a second. I still want to go back to this Mystic Rose thing, because this Mystic Rose meditation, I think, is one of his most brilliant meditations.
Yes.
And when you look at it and think that it's all the same, you know, if that's what you think, the idea is, first of all, if you look in your body, when you're crying, you're using the same abdominal muscles, and the same strain, you know, the same thing happens in your neck, and the same, like, tightness, like, sort of near your sex chakra. That happens when you're crying, and it also happens when you're laughing. The same exact contractions, and the same contractions happen when you're having sex, when you're having orgasms.
Oh, there you go, yeah. Okay. So
you're using all those muscles, and you're actually releasing things. So you're releasing the crying, so you're releasing sadness or whatever. When you're laughing, you're releasing tension, which also releases sadness and other blockages or whatever. And then, so to be then silent, you're able to be silent because you've released all the things that are making noise inside you.
There you go. Right. That's what a description. I love the explanation. I mean, there's sort of the part of Tantra is you have to experience it, you know, and don't turn off the mind. But boy, when you describe it that way, my mind goes its own ecstasy.
Yeah. Well, the thing, the beautiful part about you and I, you know, us talking with each other, is that we've both, in certain ways, thrown ourselves into as much of these practices as we could find.
Right.
And so when I'm talking to you, it's like I'm talking to somebody who, you know, you've traveled all over the United States to be with different Tantra teachers and experience them and then, you know, and then document these experiences. And when you wrote The Complete Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex, you had to describe these techniques so that somebody who's never been in a class could try to get their mind around this stuff and then try to get their body into it.
Yes, exactly. And it can be a little, as you well know, confusing to people to think, oh, well, what is this thing? And to make it concrete enough for people to understand this is the technique that brings people to the big double E of ecstasy and enlightenment, but then here are the very specific things you do, like when you were describing the specific techniques. Because it has to be brought down to, well, okay, this is a state that you get into that does bring you to the higher states of ecstasy and enlightenment, but there are actually breathing that go along with it and movements that go along with it, and you know them all, and I certainly wouldn't say I know them all. I know a lot of them and practice them and find a lot of them fascinating, and the main thing is that it brings people to a state of feeling love and really intimate. I think that's what really gets me about what's so attractive about the whole experience. That you open your heart to love.
And to self-love. Yeah. It's like very forgiving. Tantra has helped so many people forgive themselves. Ooh, what was that? Did anyone hear that? That funny sound? That I just heard? I guess not. Okay. Tantra, I mean, it allows people to forgive themselves of their, of the things they can't stand about themselves. They forgive themselves and they forgive other people, and the love that they have is, like, profound. Hello?
We lost our guest.
Oh, no.
Are you feeling like you just don't get it? All this talk about sex and love, love and sex? Feeling like all people ever think about and talk about is sex? Maybe you are longing for a more spiritual sexual connection. Hey, maybe you are just totally confused about all of it. Lori Handler's new book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy, puts the innocence and love back into sex, and it gives Tantra the respect it truly deserves. In this book, you will discover a wonderful meditation on self-love. You will also find fun new ways to develop an intimacy with yourself, whether or not you have a partner. And now, for only $19.99, you can get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. Right now, go to www.sexandhappiness.com and order your copy. Give yourself the gift.
That's sexandhappiness.com.
Are you someone who's looking for more pleasure in your life and you've never heard of East Garden? East Garden is a comfortable and elegant environment for women to explore the tools of pleasure and other educational materials. These materials enhance mind, body, and spirit. Eve's Garden encourages women to take responsibility for their own sexuality and clearly understand that bodily pleasure and spiritual joy are one and the same. While in New York City, you can visit the store at 119 West 57th Street, Suite 1201. And now, for a limited time, you can get a 15% discount on everything in stock if you go through evesgarden.com/Tantra Cafe. Go there now.
Hi, this is Marco May. I'm really happy you're enjoying bbsradio.com.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. We had a little technical difficulty there, but we are back. And we were talking about Osho. I just want to remind people that I did have a whole show about Osho, which you can go back and find on tantracafe.com. It's myself and Om Rupani longing for Osho, and sometimes Judy and I long for Osho, too. And I think we have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, Lori. It's James Alfaro.
Who is it?
It's James Alfaro.
Hi, James Alfaro. Fantastic to hear from you.
Well, I got your email just in time.
That's wonderful. So is there anything you want to say to myself or Dr. Judy while you're on here?
Well, I wanted to say hello, first of all. I haven't talked to you in a while. And
yeah.
I want to thank Dr. Judy for the opportunity to speak with the people from Esquire when we did our interview.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. This is Jim Alfaro, who was in that interview, Judy, that...
Oh, right. How amazing. Fantastic. Right. About the wonders of your relationship and how it changed with Lori.
Yes.
Oh, how fantastic. Well, tell the story, and God only knows if we could cut off again, continue with it, and then call me back or something. But do tell the story.
It was great. I talked to the person. It was really interesting to see our words in print. You know, it was really interesting that I don't know how many people read Esquire, but hopefully they read that. And, you know, maybe they'll be enlightened a little bit and want to explore Tantra. That was kind of one of the things that when Gloria asked me if I was interested in doing the interview, I said, sure, you know, I'd be happy to do.
Well, you had an amazing transformation in studying with Lori.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, tell a little bit about that.
Both Lori and I have. It was really fantastic. I have to say, some of Lori's courses were... She didn't take... She wasn't easy on me. It was probably very difficult. But I would recommend her courses to anyone.
And Jim, can you tell us a little bit about the difference that it might have made in your life together?
Well, the main difference that we can actually talk to each other and not in that typical in a relationship way where I talk to her, she gets mad, storms off, or she talks to me, I get mad, storm off. We can actually communicate together quite easily. That's probably the biggest thing. We can actually communicate on an even level and be able to accomplish things that way.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic, Jim. Let me just, hold on 1 second. Is Judy still with us? I think we dropped Judy.
Uh-oh.
Okay, great. We're having a lot of difficulty, craziness tonight, but that's okay, whatever. Well, Jim, I'm so glad that you called in. I'm thrilled to hear from you. I'm thrilled that Esquire did that article about you two.
Yeah, we got our copy not too long ago. It was pretty cool.
That's wonderful. That is really wonderful. Yeah, and Judy was the person who found that the writer for Esquire for us, so it was fantastic. Judy, are you back with us yet? Okay, good. Good. All right, Jim, well, listen, anything else? You want to share anything else?
I just wanted to share with you that I'm starting up with a men's circle group here this weekend. I'm going to explore it and see what they're all about. They're looking for some people to help lead, facilitate, and hold space for a men's group.
Where is it? In San Francisco?
No, it's going to be down here in Los Angeles.
In L.A. Okay, great. Great.
Yeah. I'm going to go and check that out and make some contacts. And you know, Billy and I still want to, expand the community here. Maybe this is a way to help do that.
Well, you know, you don't know this, but I'm just going to say this on the air now because I just might as well announce it. I'm going to be moving to Scottsdale, Arizona in early 2009.
Let us all take a very deep breath.
Wow! Yeah, so Jim, I'm going to be closer to you, and we can expand some things in Los Angeles and San Francisco and San Diego, wherever, yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, now this is amazing.
I'm excited. Definitely excited about that.
Yeah, thanks.
So you're moving to Scottsdale.
I am, Judy. I'm moving to Scottsdale. I mean, I'll still be based in New York. You know, all my courses and everything on the East Coast will still be very much on the East Coast. And my trips to India will still be going to India. But my home, I'm actually going to purchase another home. I haven't had a home in 3 years. I'm going to purchase a home for myself in Scottsdale, Arizona, to be near the group called People Unlimited, who have been guests on my show twice, the people who are into physical immortality. But I don't want to go there now because it's like a whole nother topic.
Right. I want to continue to hear about the trip to India, right? As a whole, yes. It's all related because Tantra is, in fact, a lot about long life. And really conserving your energy and preserving and using it properly so that you live a long life and that you have a lot of joy. So it doesn't matter where you live, you're bringing your joy anyway with you.
That's exactly right. It's about long life and it's about living in the unknown. So that's what it's about. So Jim, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Give my love to Gloria. I'm glad you came on when Judy and I were on together, and I'll see you sooner than you know.
Fantastic. I can't wait.
Thanks. Okay. So, one
of the things that is so amazing about you is how you support people's lives in a number of ways. Number one, in how you are loving, which is so joyous for people and rare and a wonderful experience to embrace. And also that you don't let people get away with stuff.
Yeah.
Which is both things combined are a rarity.
Well, thank you. And I think Jim said that. He said that I was kind of tough on him. But you know what? he and his wife have been through every course I have, and then they've been through it a couple of times. And listen, it saved their marriage. And it's not like it's just them. It's them and their three kids. So, like, they're typical, regular people. They're not like, I like people to know that, like, people who do Tantra are, like, regular people.
Right. That is what's important. And when Jim says, you're tough on me, I think, people can hear that in a certain way. What he really means about that is telling the truth. Not to hurt people, but also not to just let people get away with stuff that is their regular trips that they get away with. Like trying to be nice or people pleasing or even being angry all the time. So being tough on either one of those and pointing it out and letting people confront that that's what they're doing.
Right. Now we have to break again for a moment. We have another commercial break. So, I'm avoiding the echo on this line that we're on, but I'm hoping it's listening to me. Yeah, we need to take one more short break and have a piece of music. So, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm here with Judy Koryansky, and we will be right back. Please stay tuned.
If you want financial advice on how to plan for the future, I know exactly who you should call. My friend Jeff DeLone. Jeff's worked with over 300 individuals, professionals, and corporations in the past 20 years. He helps clients develop strategies for estate planning, investments, and retirement. Jeff DeLone is located in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. But wherever you are in the United States, you can reach Jeff at 610-356-1254. Or you can email him at jdelone@deloanefinancialgroup.com. That's jdelone@deloanefinancialgroup.com.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. Jeff DeLone is a registered representative with FSC Securities Corporation. DeLone Financial Group is not.
Where she at? I'm searching for this fine shorty. And it ain't like I'll be getting naughty. I'm for real, you know I don't play that. I mean it when you hear me say that. Madly searching for this fine shorty. In my world, the number one hottie. Everywhere she make him go crazy. Got to get me, yes, not a maybe.
Teri aankhein bhool bhuliya, baatein hain bhool bhulamma. Tere sapno ki galiyon mein, I keep looking for you, baby. Teri aankhein bhool bhuliya, baatein hain bhool bhulamma. Tere sapno ki galiyon mein, you keep driving me so crazy.
Hi, this is Laurie. You have just heard Bulbulaya, which was the number one song on all the radios when I was last in India. It's from a Bollywood movie called Bulbulaya, and it's from the CD called Rockin' DJ Mix 2007. Bulbulaya, the guy is praying, Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Hari Krishna, Hari Ram. He prays all day and all night for his hottie. It's like a disco techno mix, and it's a great dance song, and I loved it. Of course, I had to get it, so. Anyway, we're back. Judy and I are talking.
What? Yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking about my trip to India, and let me just say, you know, let me tell people the bottom line for the trip, because we're kind of running out of time, and that's that, you know, people come with me, we do Tantra on the trip, we go to all these sites, we go to the Ganges River where people are praying, we go to the Khajuraho Kama Sutra temples where there's all this sex depicted on the outside of the temples, and then inside they're like sort of clean blank, nothing. And, you know, it becomes very sacred and holy inside without attachment to the material plane, as it were. But the whole idea of going to India is really to teach Westerners without teaching them, but to actually have Westerners experience the experience of surrender. And that is the whole mission of my trip. I mean, to have people experience really what it is to surrender and be in the unknown without, you know, even though they protest and they resist for a long time and they get sick and they do all these things, but it's all about, you know, experiencing surrender, which is to, like, not have things the way your ego has to have them.
Well, that is a very challenging experience because, if anything, as Westerners, we want to be in control. And I think about that issue a great deal, in fact, because one of my existential thoughts consistently is how much control do I have over my life? And I remember from many years ago being a research scientist at Columbia Medical School, and I did research about what's called the locus of control. So people can think about it now, even it's a scale from 1 to 7, and at one end of the scale is the experience that you are totally in control of everything that happens, that you define what it is. And at the other extreme end, at the 7, is that absolutely nothing is in your control, that it is all destiny and all predetermined. And where do you fall on that line from 1 to 7? It's called the locus of control. And I'm always thinking about that. Like, how much am I in control of my life versus do things just happen? Sometimes I will find myself saying that. This just happened. And yet, can I really turn it around and say, no, I am in total control? And often it just fluctuates wherever I decide I am. I'm at scale of locus of control from 1 to 7.
Well, it would seem, Judy, that, you know, with the work that you've done, the work that I've done, the work that people do in Tantra, and at least on a spiritual path, even people who aren't necessarily tantric, but they're into some kind of Zen or whatever, part of that is to give up the illusions of the mind. And the illusions of the mind have a lot to do with control. You know, like I think we can control everything. And at some point, maybe we can't. Maybe it's really, that's just an illusion that we're holding on to, that the ego is holding on to like crazy. And that everything is just a crapshoot. It's like a free fall. The part I like about Tantra is that, and I've relaxed my need to control so much, is that I set my intention. You know, I intended to have a radio show. I intended to have a book. I intended to be a teacher of Tantra. I was already a teacher. I intended to travel the world. And then I let go and I just do my cobra breaths. You know, at some point I just stop driving, you know.
That, I think, is really the beauty of the path. Which is exactly that sense of setting the intention, because that's what you do on the trip, as you were saying on the bus while you're on the India trip you're about to undertake with people, that you do set the intention, and then you have to let go. Because, in fact, I do the same in the sense that I travel the world. I set an intention years ago to bring Tantra to the rest of the world, and I spent a lot of time in China where I bring back their own traditions that they forgot, so to speak.
That's right.
As they did in India, where it started, and people don't practice it, and they don't even know what is Tantra, what is Tantric sex, you know, so that was an intention. And then just...
Wait a minute, don't forget Iran. Don't forget that you went to Iran.
Yes,
and you talked to people who don't even talk about things like this.
Yes, this is true. I did go to Iran, and... And in fact, I just finished a four-set books of sex education, and one article is written by a friend of mine, Sarah Nuthaday, who does, in the last few years, since I was in Iran, and thanks to you, went with someone who was Iranian, and therefore I was not totally lost. There is this friend of mine who now does talk about sex from on an internet situation that goes to Iran. So there
That's
were people
beautiful.
In Iran who asked me questions exactly like the questions I get here in America. And in fact, one very cute man who stopped me in the halls of the hospital that I was lecturing at, and he said, Dr. Judy, what I want to ask you is it okay for a man in his 30s to date and fall in love with a woman who's in her 50s? I thought, how cute. You know, the cougars and the boy toys exist in Iran as well.
Oh, my God. Well, that's so great.
Adorable.
That's great. So that's it. I mean, basically what we're talking about, what you and I, when I made my introduction of you this evening and I said we were like sisters, you know, you and I have,
yes.
We're awakened. And many of our friends and the colleagues and the students and the people that we surround ourselves with at this point in our lives are awakened. And our mission is also to awaken others and to re-remind them of what's their birthright, of what their energy is, of their creation, the energies of creation, which is really their sexual energy. And by going to India or going to China or going to Nepal or going to Iran or any of these places, which where we've gone, where we've taken people, whatever, it's all about waking people up to becoming more empowered, to becoming more navigating of the waters of the unknown, to becoming more free in themselves of whatever, of their addiction to how
so
it has to be versus how it is. And
so
that's really Tantra.
So now since we're on, and it's almost the end of the show, and since we're at a turning point in our country, having just elected an African-American, a man who father was from Kenya and who has a very mixed background from an ethnic point of view and all these different paths that he's taken, then to Harvard Law Review, and now to president at 47. How do you feel that's going to change the world of Tantra and people practicing tantric sex?
Well, here's my take on it. I blogged about it last night on my blog on blogger.com, and I have this meditation where I have people press the red button and fall into the unknown, and I said, wow, the whole country pushed the red button last night and fell into the unknown. And they took the whole rest of the world with them. So my feeling about it is I think people have a very positive attitude. It's funny because usually people resist change, and this time people went for change. And I see that in my value system, that's a very positive thing. So I say more power to us. I say maybe tantricas can visit the White House and work with this man. I mean, I have all kinds of hope about it. And you know what? The way I am, I'm not going to give up on that vision. I actually will, like, work to make it happen. And you know what? You've been there. You were in the White House with Bill Clinton, you know what I mean? Who's to say that you're not going to be there again and you're going to bring me with you?
Oh, that would be fascinating. You're absolutely right. I did go to the White House and was part of one of Bill Clinton's Saturday radio programs where he has 6 to 8 people from various fields of science and arts and whatever present at the time and talking to him about various issues. And I do remember that I asked him what the key was to being a good musician, and he said to have an affair with your instrument.
Well, on that note, we have to end the show, and I think that's a great place to end. If you've been listening tonight, you have been with us on Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. I've been with my wonderful guest and friend and sister, Judy Koryansky. And you can reach us me at Laurie at butterflyworkshops.com. You can go to judykoryansky.com. You can write to me about her to find out more information about her. You can pick up the Complete Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex. And I'm saying namaste from Tantra Cafe. Judy, namaste.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yay.